Hello everyone, welcome to the When It Worked podcast. You're with your host, Julian Leahy. Today I'm joined by the fantastic Kyle Milley. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Hey, thanks Julian. Glad to be here. Excited to chat with you.
Awesome. So we're going to play a game of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Kyle, you've got three lifelines. If you're not sure, you would be advised to use them. You can do a 50-50 split, poll the audience, or you have 30 seconds to quickly Google. Are you ready?
Born ready.
All right, let's go. By definition, a holographic will is which of the following? Spoken orally, electronically printed, handwritten, or spray painted on a structure? First of all, do you know what a holographic will is, Kyle? I don't.
It's a new term for me, so I love it. I'm going to have to assume it's spoken orally.
Right. Well, should we use a lifeline? I don't know. If you're guessing, I would probably use a lifeline. It's a pretty tough question for the first one.
All right. I will go with your advice and use a lifeline.
All right. Let's do that. Okay. So there we go. Should we lock it in? We've got A and B. Yeah. Spoken orally is Kyle's answer. I'm feeling a bit more confident. Oh, it was incorrect, unfortunately.
Show's over.
Well, that's how it goes. And it was a very hard question, I've got to say, Kyle. Let's give Kyle a round of applause. That was extremely difficult. I feel a bit guilty. I should have put that question further down the line, but never mind. And let's get straight into Kyle. Now, Kyle, you're a CRO. What is a CRO? And you do things a little bit differently, so we'll talk about that as well. First of all, what's a CRO, Kyle?
Traditionally, it's called Chief Revenue Officer. Most people in the business community would recognize it as, you know, a higher-end executive of a larger business, you know, in the 50 to 100 million beyond range. And I'm doing something a little bit different with it. You know, I think there's an opportunity for small businesses to leverage the knowledge of these marketing and sales leaders in the sub 10 million range. So I'm calling it Small Business Chief Revenue Officer. Most of these small businesses can't afford a big sales executive and a big marketing executive at the same time. So if you can bring both together for one lower cost, but same level of expertise, I think it's a win-win for small business. So we're doing it fractionally. The market has received it really well. It's been fun to kind of build this new definition for a word many of us have at least heard of but didn't know much about.
Yes, it's very interesting, this fractional concept, and it it really brings these kind of corporate structures and makes them accessible to lots of different people that are doing all sorts of strange things in their bedroom, like myself. And tell us, so basically it's kind of like having a sales and marketing team. What are some of the things you do for people?
You know, where it really starts is most small business leaders that I run into, and I specialize in B2B, so just clarifying that, they end up in the sales seat and they're kind of overseeing marketing. And that only takes you so far, right? The owner can't do it all, so they've got a scaffold. And traditionally, you've been told you have to have sales and you have to have marketing, but no small business in today's world with the cost of employees, the cost of everything, can you afford both? So what I'll end up doing is I usually come in and help get the owner out of sales and marketing completely and start to build with whatever I have. Like, I don't need a $50,000 marketing budget to succeed. I like to work with duct tape and popsicle sticks. So what do we have? What can we, you know, rub together to create a penny? And then we take that penny and maybe another and rub it together, turn it into a quarter and go on. So usually I'll identify a weakness in the sales side and the marketing side, and I'll go build whatever we need to build. And then when we have enough revenue, I bring in more experts and we kind of scaffold our way up to a full marketing and sales department.
Yes. One thing you said, I think, is probably the key really is, for solopreneur type people, is taking them out of the sales and marketing role, because that is kind of like 110% of what you do a lot of the time. And it would be nice. Is that, I guess, the broad goal for a lot of people, is to be able to sort of free themselves from the business a little bit?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the structure of the organization. But, you know, in my past, I've kind of ended up doing that. Like, that's kind of how I got to where I am, is it was owner-led sales, trying to build a bigger business, get past, you know, for my first real big win, they were stuck at about $500,000. The owner was doing it all, working 60 hours a week, couldn't escape. So we built out systems for marketing and sales that ended up, you know, helping them achieve $1 million in revenue, which was really special in that industry, because $1 million out of a location is really hard. And he went from working 60 hours a week, making, you know, $10 a month in profit, to tens of thousand dollars a month in profit and working 6 hours a week. And then at the next one, we had a different, you know, it was an owner who loved the sales part. He just didn't know how to build a sales team or a marketing engine. And we got that from 3 to 7 million in revenue. And so he never wanted to leave the sales seat. He just didn't know how to, you know, reproduce himself and not be the bottleneck. So that's kind of where I love to come in. You know, I have clients up to, you know, 20, 30 million in revenue who are kind of in the same boat. They just can't quite escape it, or they can't get their sales leader or their marketing leader to that next level. And so I come in and I push.
And how does it look? I mean, you know, are we sort of building remote sales teams and having remote marketing people working all over the place? Is that kind of how it looks? Can you give me some sort of examples of what people can expect?
Yeah, sure. We've done it multiple ways, fully remote teams with no physical office, stitching together resources of other fractionals. Like, I have this real big belief that we're getting closer and closer to the niche economy. That's what I'm calling it, where there's these riches in niches, and there are specialists who are really good at a specific skill set, and they only need 5 or 6 people who can pay their, you know, fractional fee, and they can build something really great because they've done it before and they like doing it. And so I've just been around long enough to know where to find all these folks, and I just kind of stitch them together. I have one client though. The sales team is half remote, half in person. I've got to replace the sales manager there, and not replace, they're retiring, not a get rid of. And so one of the things I know for that business is it's really important, their culture. So that's a chance to bring in someone who's going to be on site for them as the sales manager, who's going to really be my proxy when it comes to culture. So it just, it just really depends on the situation. And I think that's one of my special gifts, is I really kind of look at the whole thing and say, okay, what's most important to this business and to get to that next step. And we go find it. Like, I don't live in a world where it doesn't exist. I go find it.
And what types of businesses work best with your services, Carl?
What I found is if you're in the professional services space where you have a high ticket item, like a high ticket project, and I'm talking tens of thousands of dollars for a project, or you have a monthly recurring service that's in the thousands of dollars a month, my model is really well engineered for it, because there's just, you can't just do marketing, or you can't just do sales. Like, in, you know, business to consumer, Amazon, they don't really have to have a sales team. I mean, yes, they probably do. They're big enough. But for the most part, it's 3 clicks and a buy. But when you're in B2B, and specifically these higher ticket cost items, like I work in recruitment or MSP, it's a longer cycle. And you really have to understand how to create awareness at the marketing side, connect it to the sales pipeline, and make sure it goes all the way through to the end, and measure every input. And so professional services have these kind of longer sales cycle. You have to develop a lot of trust, which means you're actually spending quite a bit of money in marketing and sales before you actually get the product to be sold. And the way I measure ROI, the way I think about building trust, the way I generate interest, just kind of lends itself to that environment. And that's kind of where I've always been successful, is wherever, you know, you didn't need to develop meaningful relationships and exchange a large amount of money.
Yeah, the measuring what you're doing one is something that I think a lot of businesses maybe at one stage are not doing. And do you find that really brings a lot of clarity, and people really appreciate some of the systems and things that can give you that data?
Yeah, here's my favorite thing I hear from entrepreneurs who are kind of struggling with marketing and sales. They always say this, every single one I've ever met, always says this when we're having this conversation and they don't know how to do it, which is why I'm on the phone with them. But they basically say, if I knew I was making money, I would give you all the dollars. It's something like that. Like, if I knew I was getting $2 back, I'd give you all the dollars. First of all, that's actually categorically not true. They get a little nervous when you say, okay, well, I just proved it's a 4X ROI. Can I have 40,000? They get nervous. So it's just kind of funny that they think like that. And then when it actually gets there, it causes them a little hesitation. But what I have found is there is no good method, because a marketer thinks about marketing ROI, a salesperson thinks about the final signature, and because there's that tension between those two in attribution of who gets the credit, most businesses spend a lot of time distracted on how to measure ROI and return. And one of the things I brought into my model, it's connected to the revenue cascade and a concept I call ROAS, is we've have built a way to actually measure ROI across marketing and sales cohesively, giving both sides equal share of the attribution and putting them both in the game to work together. I call it the revenue zipper. Instead of having marketing and sales in two separate silos, we stitch them together so that marketing and sales like work hand in hand. So I don't have, you know, separate marketing meetings and separate sales meetings for most of my clients. I have revenue meetings because the sales guy's got to be selling what I'm telling people in the world in marketing.
Oh, that sounds awesome, Kyle, because as someone who's worked in sales, you know, the fizz of winning is a big part of it. And the marketing people sometimes, I guess, are a bit remote. That would really be fantastic, getting everybody on board and looking at all the metrics together, as good for motivation, I suppose, if not anything else.
Well, and I want, you know, the sales guys are the people who are in the room having the conversation with the client. And they're the ones who get the phone call when it's not going well, when it was over promise and under delivered, right? Like, we know that that's the person who takes the hit. And we also know that usually the sales people who are actually getting the ink on the paper or digital is the one who is like beholden to the marketing, right? They get marketing done for them, not with them. And so with the revenue model I built, if we're going to sponsor an event and it's $10,000 or something like that, I bring the sales team into the conversation because they're the ones who have to go sell there. And if they don't feel confident in spending that $10,000 because they're accountable to the department's success, right? All teams and marketing thinks it's a good idea, but sales doesn't. We're having a very different conversation about spending that money. And that is exactly what most owners want to have happen that I have found, is somebody to be a steward of their money and think about ROI in every channel. And so, you know, magic really happens when we both agree. Marketing says, yeah, this is a great event. Look at our target audience. It's exactly who we want. And sales is like, oh my gosh, yes, my contacts are LinkedIn are all going and talking about this. We're going to crush it. And then we can use sales to say, what do you want? What do you want those prospects to hear from marketing? That informs booth design. And we can, you know, be playful with how we engage with them, build up automations to connect our salespeople, and build automations in marketing to connect our salespeople with the prospects on the ground at the event. Now we've got, you know, truly the revenue zipper.
Awesome.
It's a lot of fun to build that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And just on the topic of when it comes to pay for something like this, how has it worked out? You know, is it a percentage of growth that the owners have to pay?
No, I believe in flat fee. I'm very transparent about believing in flat fee. I don't really believe in discounts. I don't really believe in making things complicated when it comes to marketing and sales, because the second you introduce confusion or, you know, some other element, you might trade some of your trust. So I charge a flat fee. I'm very open about it because I don't want anybody to be like going down the funnel, working with me, and then get shocked and be like, what? I can't afford that. You know, it wasn't like a number I just pulled out of the air. I know what really expensive what really good fractional chief marketing officers cost. I know what fractional chief sales officers cost. I know what the average price for a VP of sales and marketing or a director of growth or whatever you call that, you know, sales and marketing in a small business. I've priced myself intentionally below a full-time hire there because you're getting a, you know, higher powered executive. So our offering is between $9,000 and $12,000 a month. Now, I'm only saying that kind of variability because there is other issues with like how big the team is or how advanced and mature the marketing or sales is. You know, I have one client who had zero marketing. It was literally a build from the ground up. I mean, there was nothing there, but they had a very mature sales team. And when you have a very mature sales team, there's a lot less handholding I have to do. And I saw the data. So I'm like, we're going to put a lot of work on marketing.
Awesome. And if people head over to Next Level, what's the process for them to get in touch with you? Do they book a call with you or somebody?
Yeah, you can fill out a form or take a look through the website. There's ways to engage with me there. I always do a discovery call first. Like I believe in vetting my clients just as much as they vet me. You know, magic only happens when somebody is ready for it. And so I want to make sure that, you know, I pick winners. Honestly, I pick winners because I need to protect our brand and our reputation, and I can't overpromise and underdeliver. So, you know, I'm looking for businesses that are like serious about growth. There's a lot of entrepreneurs who want to grow, but that, you know, that it's scary. And I love them and I get it. Like I literally get it. I'm sitting in that seat too. But you know, one of the things I do is I believe by putting, you know, my money where my mouth is. So I actually do my own offering. So I have a fractional chief revenue officer for Next Level because I sell a high ticket multi-month, professional service. And so they run my marketing and sales, just like I would expect, you know, a company that I want to work with to do. I have a, you know, really clear financial picture and understand my financials, because the last thing I want to do is have you spend on me and then, you know, put yourself in danger. So those are the kind of things I talk about in a discovery call. You know, if there's still a good fit potential, we'll do an assessment. So I have a pretty lengthy assessment process that I go through. And then I do a 90-minute deep dive with members of their team and their key stakeholders, because at the end of the day, I'm joining the team. Really, I'm a team member now. And I'm going to have, you know, an opinion, and I'm going to bring things to the table, and I'm going to execute. So I want to make sure everybody knows my position, my culture, our, you know, the values we bring, the model that we're bringing, so that, you know, everybody starts on the same page and aligned, and we can start to run fast. Because I look at myself and our team as on the clock on the first day of our engagement. And a lot of the work I do pre-sales is so that we can hit the ground running fast and start to generate ROI on our own cost, because we're a cost center now too.
Yeah, that's the good thing, I guess, about fractional services, in terms of, you know, you get them in, and they're motivated, they're working, they want to hit it out of the park. And sometimes, you know, having it's an advantage over having full-time regular departments, because you know, you don't get the same sort of cultural problems that you can have when you get somebody in as a contractor. How long do you work with clients for usually?
So far it's, you know, 6 to 12 months seems to be about the right amount of time. 6 months, definitely, depending on kind of their maturity and how much they need just to like break through the next plateau. Sometimes it's just kind of resetting, you know, the marketing and sales strategy, developing measurement systems, and they already have someone who's been close but didn't have the experience, or have, you know, the most CEOs that I work with haven't been marketing and sales executives before. They've just cobbled it together and they've got a young potential person, but they don't have the experience. So with them, I bring them up to speed quickly. Some are longer, right? 12 months, where they've got a lot to do. You know, one, we built an entire new product from the ground up, kind of pivoted the whole sales team, built a whole new marketing engine, and merged a brand. Like, that was a big lift. It took a while. But generally, I'm a stopgap. I'm a bridge to the next level, and then I get out of the way.
Awesome, Carl. That's very interesting. So if people are out there and they want to sort of get through to the next level, a CRO might be worth investigating, at least learning about and seeing if it's a good fit. All of Carl's details are in the show notes and the description if you want to have a chat to Carl. What sort of businesses, you know, niche-wise, do you work with?
Digital marketing agencies, especially recruitment and people businesses, if you're in a people business. And then the third niche I would say would be small cybersecurity managed IT.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you very much, Kyle, for coming in. And some very interesting information. The whole concept is very interesting to me. Let's have a round of applause for Kyle Milley. Well done, Kyle.
Yeah, I took the ball on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Ah, well, you know, you didn't lose anything. Thank you very much, Kyle. I'm going to wrap things up. Thanks for listening and watching. See you next time. Bye.